Hello and welcome back. Now, I'm doing something a little bit different this week and talking to Sally Clark, a friend of mine who's worked in advertising. She was communications director for various charities and she has been a stay-at-home mum since her eldest child was born 5 years ago. This is a one-off. We're back to more of the same next time. My next guest is Catherine Parkinson from the IT Crowd and Humans and lots of things. But I thought it might be interesting to hear from someone outside the pool of people that this podcast usually focuses on. And it was really enlightening, actually. I think my main takeaway is that, first of all, the actor, writer, comedians that I talk to are incredibly lucky to do something with the kind of flexibility that means you do still get to spend a lot of time with your kids. It's worlds away from most work environments. And secondly, the importance of self-care, whatever that means to you. Sometimes we might judge the alien-like people around us who appear to have the time and money to get their hair blow-dried once a week and master Italian or whatever. But maybe we should be applauding them for having the nous to know what it is they need to get through it all. And your version of that could be having a packet of hula hoops, whatever. But it's important to do it. Anyway, when Sal came in to see me, I was setting up all my equipment with my pop shields and my mic stands and bloody blah, and realised that I had forgotten the one thing that I absolutely categorically needed to record the podcast. So I managed to borrow what is, in essence, a glorified dictaphone, and we proceeded to huddle really quite closely over it so that you could hear what we were saying.
I wish I hadn't had pickled onion monster munch, because our noses are virtually touching.
Yeah, I mean,
Luckily, we do know each other quite well.
There are other people I have interviewed that this would definitely be more awkward.
Who would that be?
I mean, it's pretty uncomfortable.
This is really the closest I've been to an adult in quite a long time.
Okay, let's try a sort of reportage thing where I'm going to move the microphone as if I'm in a press pen.
I'm over it now.
Can you handle it?
Through the fourth wall or whatever it's called.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take my cans off to break that wall so that it feels more normal.
I mean, go for your life, but this doesn't feel normal. There we go.
Okay. So.
You'd have to look at me while you're doing, because that's really penetrating.
I do have to look at you. That's kind of rule number one of interviewing skills. So as I have discussed on this before, you are the person who came up with the phrase, the trapdoor.
Indeed.
Can you describe to me how you described it to me?
That having a child, you're walking along and you're like, I'm going to have a baby. And then you have the baby and you fall down a hole that you didn't even see. And the walls are greased with Vaseline. And you look up and go, oh, I'll get there in a minute. I'm quite busy, but I'll get out of this. But I'm busy at the minute. And then when you have just a modicum of time to try and escape, you do realise that those walls are greased with Vaseline and you can't fucking get out. I was like, oh, it's a gender trap door.
Yeah.
It's one that only women who give birth or have children fall through. And I think about it. I look at other women and I think, well, you don't look like you've fallen through that door. I mean, I am so far down that door. I've got sort of like a visitor's book. I am in that. I'm right down in it. But yeah, I mean, it's like nothing has moved on since the 70s or earlier. And in fact, I was talking to a local neighbour who was a very good friend of my partner's mum. So we live in the house that my partner was born in. And all his mum's friends still live around the corner, but they're now like, you know, 80 and, you know, growing wisteria. And she was walking past our house while I was sweeping my front garden. And while I was sweeping my front garden, I was thinking, you fucking idiot, look at you sweeping your front garden. Although there's part of me also going, oh, lovely, you're sweeping your front garden. You know, I'm constantly in a state of conflict. And I said, you know, was it like this when you had children? And she's like, yes. She goes, but the difference was we all stayed at home.
Yes.
So there was a huge tribe of them. There was like 20 Islington, because I happened to be in Islington, mums with kids. Now, that would be bearable.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll still get housemaid's knee, but you'll get housemaid's knee with other people. Whereas I am a unicorn. There aren't many of me. There aren't many women who have given up in London. And I think this is a very specific thing to London and a certain class in London, maybe, definitely, who have given up work to raise their children. Most have either gone back to work full time and have got kids in nursery or with nannies, which we must discuss because nobody outside London has a fucking nanny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what most people have done. So I am the unicorn surrounded by nannies. I mean, and they're all on their phones. And then when I turn up, they all throw their phones away like they're, you know, like they're drugs, because they're like, a mum's watching us, a mum is watching us. So nannies don't want to hang out with mums because mums judge and I do. And, you know, a unicorn.
There's so much I want to say from everything you've just said. Can you briefly tell me the story? There was a story where you were, and actually I joke about it, but you were quite upset at the time, but I have a memory of you running. You wanted to join in a group of nannies because Boz was friends with them or something.
Really, I was definitely being cold-shouldered by a bunch of nannies. I mean, I think about it now and I sort of wince, and I also want to hug myself. I was being cold-shouldered by a bunch of nannies, and I saw that Boz was at a very small nursery. And I didn't even know there was another exit, but I saw them slink out the other exit. I was like, hello. I didn't say hello, but in my head I was like, hello, where are you going?
And they were literally running away from you down the street.
Yeah, they weren't running, but they were definitely, brisk walking and not looking back. That's the giveaway, pretending that they'd not seen me with my McLaren running after them. So, yeah, tough times.
Open the front door.
I struggle to have someone look after my children when I don't earn any money. I find that a really difficult thing to do. I find it a really difficult thing to claim any time for myself until the point when I've gone mad. But I go mad and I go, oh my God, I hate them.
But so here's the thing. When you came in and we were talking and we were both saying, you know, I've had my fringe trimmed because I had a recording cancelled this mm-hmm. afternoon, so I had time to go in and do it. Mm-hmm. And you were saying,
I haven't had a smear for, I mean, smear has been on my to-do list for about 4 years. And in fact, no, I did have one after my second child was born and I had no one to look after her. Well, that can't have been true. But I did have a nanny at the time, and I must have made this decision that she take out the elder one and I bring my baby, thinking she might sleep during the smear. And during the smear, Agnes was on my stomach.
Oh.
And I had to keep looking round at the nurse, round Agnes, as the nurse was like, just open your legs a little bit. You know, I had a smear with a baby on my tummy.
Oh, my God.
Nobody batted an eyelid. I went, this is uncomfortable. She went, oh, it happens all the time. And I thought, yeah, I bet it does. So I must have had a smear within the last 2.5 years. But it is, when somebody said, what are you most looking forward to of Ag starting nursery? So she starts nursery at the end of Easter. She's two, she'll be 2.5. And I went, oh, I mean, I don't know, just the time to myself. I'm going to have a smear. And they were like, that's top of the list. And I was like, well, yeah, actually, on the most base practical things, I haven't had a haircut in 8 months. I mean, I look like I've been dug up. It's hard.
You don't.
Thanks. It's hard slog raising children. And I don't mean raising children. I mean looking after, cleaning, cooking for, talking to children all day.
So where do you think that comes from, that feeling of, because it is a hard slog, so where do you think that comes from? So, you know, that feeling of, I am not allowed to, like, I'm not contributing unless I'm, if I'm not financially contributing to our family.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I have that feeling and I am financially contributing.
Yeah.
I have that feeling, which is, if I am not physically working, I need to be looking after my kids, but I also want to be looking after my kids. But then I also want to do other things and I'm conflicted and I don't know.
But you have a much fuller plate than I do. So you have lots more outside the kids. You have your own pursuits. You have this. You. If anything, since you've had kids, you have become more productive. And you say that's because actually you haven't compared to all your other friends. Well, I must be. And I.
Yeah, Eunice, you need to listen to this podcast, mate.
Yeah, I quite. And I listen and I go, whatever. You might as well be talking to people from another planet. Yeah. That is not my life. My life has shrunk since having children. And I think, you know, I was trying to work out why that was. And I think I knew when I got pregnant that I wasn't going to... I was like, phew, canoe, I can leave this fucking job. Because it was a really hard, stressful job. And I was like 38. And I was like, right, I've left it not quite late now, but actually it felt quite late.
What were you doing?
I was running communications for a charity. But it was quite a hardcore charity funded by sort of business people, and they ran it like McKinsey's, and it was great, but I mean it was relentless, and I was ready to leave. I was ready for my life to change, definitely. And then I knew that I wasn't going to go back, and I sort of thought, well, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. And then it turns out that it's not quite that straightforward. So, and both my children have sort of chronic health needs. My first has really severe allergies that took at least 2.5 years to get your head around and required constant cooking in a way that I don't think anyone who doesn't have kids with allergies would understand. Now he's 5 and it's more manageable, but he still has allergies, and they are severe allergies, and we have to carry an EpiPen. And there was a period of the first, say, 2.5 years where he was in and out of hospitals and doctor's appointments for a lot of the time. And that there was just no way I could have ceded that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. It was too scary. It was too unknown. And, yeah, I remember meeting a mum of a kid with allergies and her saying that she'd applied to the council for disability benefit for the sheer amount of extra work and caregiving that is required on top of having children. Mm. And I can completely understand why you would do that.
Yeah.
'Cause it was relentless, you know? And then rather than then go, right, okay, once I've got a handle on that, and then I got pregnant again, and the decision was, are we going to have a baby or do I go back to work? And we decided, let's try to have a baby. Turned out it was very easy to have a baby, but I have awful pregnancies. I'm sick all the time. And I just didn't feel that I could go and tout myself for work while constantly swallowing vomit. I just felt that was not possible. And then when she was born, she's been poorly for the first 2 years of her life. So there has been a stress added to having children and being a stay-at-home mom that sort of doesn't allow for another life. Or maybe I'm making excuses for myself. I don't know. I know some. Yeah, I don't know. I felt that I couldn't go out and get work.
How do you feel now in terms of yourself and like your marketability? You know, have you, because you've dipped the toe a little bit, haven't you?
Tiny, but with such timidity. I mean, I've not once called somebody up and said, hey, do you need anyone? I've only ever been contacted. And then I go, yeah, you know, no, I don't. I mean, this is the sort of thing about ag starting at nursery. So now I will have 3 hours a day where I can go and start doing those things. And it's sort of terrifying. I'm terrified. But at the same time, I can't be this sort of angry, railing mum. It is not healthy and it doesn't go down well in the playground. People aren't attracted to that, oddly, so if they don't, they don't think, whew, she looks fun.
I want to run over to that mother.
She looks fun. Let's go hang out with that one. What's she talking about now? Trump? There she goes again. You know, I mean, they're not interested. And I found myself saying to my kids the other day in the bathroom, does anyone give a shit what I think? And I was like, oh, 5 and 2. No, they do not. Or, you know, or explaining something to one of them. I can't remember, feminism or something. You know, and just catching myself going, okay, they're 5 and 2. You just need to have an adult conversation with somebody. You just need to speak to somebody other than children.
Have you had a break at all?
From the kids?
Yeah.
Yes. Recently, I have started to learn how to drive. An adult life skill that I have never needed until now. And my partner took the kids away for a week. So it wasn't actually, it was Monday to Saturday. 6 whole days. Do you know what the most startling thing about it was?
What?
I didn't drink once. And then I was like, wow, I don't feel the need to drink. Weird. Maybe I'm just too tired from driving. Because I was doing like 5 hours or 4 hours of driving lessons a day. And then within probably 24 hours of them being back, I was like, where's the wine? Where's the wine? And since then, I've made up for lost time. But it does make you realise that sort of cliche of wine time. I mean, it's not a cliche. It's very real. It's very, very real. And sometimes you just want to, you know, as you slug it back, just fucking shut up. Just fucking shut up. I don't care about fucking Star Wars, boss. Boss is way into Star Wars. And Han Solo, mum, fucking shut up. I'll be with you. It was brilliant. I loved it. I mean, I was kicking them out the door. I was like, see ya! I didn't miss them. I mean, you'd said this when you went to Mallorca or something. Yeah. You got on a plane and you were like, I never thought about them once. And I thought, heartless bitch. But now I was like, I totally get it. And now I want that to happen twice a year. I want 1 week, twice a year. Thanks.
Or you could, and it doesn't, this goes back to what we were saying, like there's a world in which you don't have to go back to work. If you don't want to go back to work, or there isn't something, you know, you are in a position where you can afford to not work. You know, you could, that those 3 hours a day,
yeah,
you could spend
doing what?
Just like loads of smear tests.
No, I just do the whole body. So I'd like a boob test. I'd like
a nostril test.
Colon test. I'd like all those tests. Yeah, be that woman.
Yeah.
That sort of really.
Just get a couple of poodles and.
I don't. Yeah, this is the thing. I find. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because this is all from a position of privilege. It's all from a position of privilege, and I totally recognise it. And I hate it at the same time. So yes, I could afford not to. And so therefore I should shut up because I could afford not to. But I will go mad and I will be the angry woman in the house drinking Sauvignon Blanc from 11, you know, cause it's like, I'll go mad. But you do therefore wonder where in this world would I now fit? Cause I didn't really fit before. So I sure as hell, I'm not going to fit now.
Well, I think it's quite common to have a point in your, like, once you've had children. I was talking to someone the other day and I can't remember who it was. But it's that, oh, it was some kid's birthday party. But that you have your baby and there might be a natural career break. In your case, you weren't particularly enjoying your job anyway. In my case, my two regular avenues of work just went dead because they were like, I think we know best. You may say you want to go back to work, but I think we've decided that you're not going to go back to work. But then in a way it was quite good because once you have children, you do change and your priorities do change. So you're not going to be exactly the same as you were before you had kids. And so it's quite good to change your focus a little bit. It doesn't need to mean, I don't mean change career necessarily, but you might want to work less long hours. You might want to work.
Don't you think this is the thing? I mean, I might want to do all those things. The world is not set up like that.
No.
This is the thing that makes, that's the trap door.
Yeah.
Really. That's the gender trap door. The world is not set up for working mothers who want the flexibility, which sounds so arrogant, but it isn't. to be with their kids and earn some money. Yeah. It's just not set up for you. So that's why you have the sort of cliche of the working mother who palms them off to the nanny and, you know, only sees them at the weekend or whatever. Business isn't set up for women to job share, to part time. I worked in the charity sector in education, predominantly. You'd have thought that had been right on. That, not a whiff of you coming back part time. Yeah. Not a whiff.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know.
And I think what often happens is people go back, but they accept a shittier job. Yeah. Because the hours won't be as long and it means they'll get to see their kid at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, fuck off. Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah.
It's totally out of date with how the world works now.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't think that the job market has moved on.
Also, what I don't understand in that context is, in my experience in roughly 20 years in the world of work, is that, yeah, a bit over, with technology, like, everything is quicker now. Mm. With, you know, like, mm-hmm. if I think about, we're in just outside Soho, I used to be a runner in Soho, because my job was to deliver contracts to the lawyer, you know, for a TV company, because they needed to be signed. Like, now you just fucking email them. Yeah. You have to employ somebody to walk over and give them, you know. So, and there are so many examples of that within the BBC that I worked for a long time as well. And so therefore, like, just the whole idea of an 8-hour working day.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. But, you know, the idea that you have to be there at 9 and have sort of, what is it? They need to have FaceTime with you.
Yeah.
Or desk time, or they need to FaceTime your desk or some shit like that. I don't know what it is. It is ludicrous, but it means...
Well, I think that makes sense. But work within, you know, like work, you know...
Of course,
you
know. But anyone who turns up at an office where most work is based predominantly and they waltz in at 10, they're sort of sniffed at, you know. And so what I remember from my time at work is all the mums would get there super early. So they'd drop their kids at nursery, get into the office at 7:45, probably having had shit all sleep, and then work really hard, relentlessly.
And then run out at 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one, and I wasn't even really cognizant of the fact that they had children.
Yeah.
And I just think, oh, I'm so sorry. Because it's knackering having kids, whether you have someone else looking after them for most of that day or not. It's tiring. And they don't sleep for a really long time.
And also in terms of that, and we were talking about this a bit before as well, which often lands on the women, but not obviously all the time, but is the mental load of the domestic.
Don't even get me started.
So I was grumbling today because the reason we're recording it on this is I left my recording device at home, because in the chaos of, you know, trying to get my daughter happy so I can leave so she's not crying, and, you know, replying to an email for a series I'm making later in the year and getting my stuff together, so I'm doing this because I'm leaving the house all day and I need everything, I forget the one major important thing that I need. And my partner doesn't have to worry about all those. I mean, he's got a shitload to worry about and he has a huge amount of responsibility, but he can leave the house and know the kids will be fine. He doesn't have to worry about, like, passing on a domestic handover.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is me talking about, I've got someone looking after my kids so I can do this. You know, a lot of people don't.
I mean, I read a Mariella Frostrop article, you know, that agony column that she does in the back of, or doesn't do anymore, and you could tell she was writing it through really gritted teeth because she was really angry with her husband about the amount of work that's involved in running a house. It's tiring. And then I get a text from my partner going, I'm just going to walk home from Soho, do you need anything on the way? And I thought, I mean, I haven't sauntered in I don't know how long. I never fucking saunter. And if I... No, I don't saunter. You're going to saunter. Think about your day, are you? Sauntering home from Soho. Good for you. And part of me thought, good for you showing that self-care as I poured myself a glass of wine. You know, and I was like, this is my self-care, sort of my head wobbling all cocky. And then I was like, that is pathetic. That is pathetic. But I mean, that self-care is just the first casualty of having children. Yeah. I mean, it's just gone. It's just gone. So when I see mums that have got manicures, you know, and these young girls, really young girls with young babies, and they have immaculate hair, immaculate clothes, immaculate makeup. The fuck you get the time? Where is that time that you find?
But they've just got a different,
you
know.
What are they doing with their kids?
Well, they might have a filthy home.
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, I always forget that.
Yeah, but you know, you don't know.
Point.
And that's important for their self. You know, I think what's so hard with this is because you do what you do and you make your choices that you make to survive in yourself and your family. Mm. And then you look at other people who are doing the others and you think, God, if you've got time to do a fucking manicure or, or go to the gym every day or do that, then you must have loads of help, or you must, not have any intellectual life.
Oh, I definitely don't think that. I just look with envy. I look at them. It's like looking through the sort of frosted Christmas window going, how did you do that? Yeah. It's beautiful. You look beautiful. That's what I do.
But it makes me feel that first very, very quickly within a few seconds by anger, because I think, well, hang on, how come I can't do that? How come I don't look anything like that?
Yeah.
And maybe what I mean...
Your house is filthy.
Yeah, exactly. It's really good for their health, though.
Yeah, my kids don't have allergies.
My kids, oh my God, bacteria everywhere.
Bleach, my kids, odor bleach. I don't know. I listened to a podcast the other day. No, it wasn't a podcast. It was a TED Talk.
You're starting to talk like a granny.
Yeah, I know, exactly. See?
I wasn't that. No, you used a mobile and a text.
What is that? My life was paused 5 years ago. So anyway, it was about how a lot of having kids is without you realizing is imitating the model that you grew up with.
Yeah.
And without realizing it, I mean, my mum was a cleaner. I am effectively a cleaner. I just clean for my own people and I don't get paid. So at least she got paid. My mum was a cleaner and a stay-at-home mum, but not, you know, in that way that everyone's mum outside London.
Yeah.
Stayed at home. That's what mum equaled stayed at home.
Yeah.
With an immaculate house, you know. And Will's mum stayed at home. And then as the children got older, transformed herself into this sort of judicial fairy who would go into Pentonville and Holloway and ended up on Newsnight. I mean, but that is the trajectory of a stay-at-home mum in Islington.
Was interesting, but why do we talk about something else now?
When I went to the incontinent clinic service, the pelvic floor, after I'd had my firstborn, and he was delivered by failed Ventouse and forceps, and so afterwards there is a fallout from that, and the NHS said, you know, these are your clinics or whatever. And trying to get to a clinic for yourself when you've got a young child, it's awful and it's impossible. And you go in and your baby's in its pram on the verge of screaming always while someone assesses what your pelvic floor strength was. And it was a young Australian sort of triathlete. And I turn up with dry hair because I'm not, and dry skin because I'm not having any dairy or eggs because of Boz. So any moisture in me has been pretty much sucked out and I'm still just drinking the occasional glass of wine. I mean, I'm looking like death warmed up. And the only thing that I'm surviving on really is coffee and just sheer determination. And she said, you know, get on your back and let's just check your pelvic floor muscles. Can you squeeze my fingers? And Boz is playing with some book in his pram. And I think she gives me a 1 out of 5 on pelvic floor strength. And I think she gives that to me out of pity. I didn't feel her fingers, and I'm pretty sure she didn't feel me, but she gave me a 1 out of 5. And then she goes, there's a lot we can work with here. And I was like, great. And then she said, right, let's look at your diet. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, obviously you're not drinking tea or coffee. And I was like, oh, no, I am. No, yeah, because I mean, I won't be able to get out of the house. I mean, I'm fucking knackered. I won't be able to get out of the house. And she was like, I know, but have you tried cardamom and pepper tea? And it took a lot of self-control just not to stand up and go, oh, fuck off, and walk out. Have I tried cardamom and pepper tea? No. Am I going to try cardamom? No. No, I'm not. I am knackered. No. And that's sort of what I feel about a lot of being a stay-at-home mum. People have all this advice that is completely and utterly irrelevant. It doesn't bear witness to the life I live. Do you get it? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Fuck off telling me to black pepper fucking cardamom tea. Yeah. No, I'm going to have a Nescafe and I'm going to have 10 cups of it. And if that means I wet my jeans, well, that's on me, isn't it?
But, okay, so... I think the feeling that a lot of working mums have is that they're constantly chasing their tails. You know, like they're constantly behind, you know, they're never ahead of the thing they need to be doing, whether it's work or whether it's looking after their kids. But it sounds like you feel like that too.
Less so as they are getting older and it's becoming... when it's all new, yes, you're constantly chasing your tail. But there's no breath in life when you're raising kids, because you sort of... So when I went to the cafe with Ag the other day, I was sort of sat down, and with Boz, she'd, you know, I'd have brought out a book, I'd have brought out a second kid. There's no fucking book. Read the posters. Look at that. That's a perf for P. You know, read that. And then a mum... brought out some playing cards for her daughter, who was probably a bit younger than Ag, and the daughter could recognise all the numbers. And even though I am on my second kid, part of me went, oh God, I should be doing that. And it was all internal. And then I started talking to Ag more eloquently to look like, you know, I was like, oh God, stop it. And then I went next door to the shop where she'd bought those cards from, and I picked them up. I was about to buy them, and I was like, put those fucking things down, you moron, put those fucking things down. So there is a different chasing of tail, because also what you carry a guilt that you're not doing enough, because your full-time job is your children. And so the fact that you didn't take them to sing and sign, and that they don't have cello on a Monday. I mean, I'm surrounded by a lot of kids who are timetabled up to their eyebrows. You know, they've got swimming on a Monday, they've got football on a Tuesday, they've got something else on a Wednesday, there's a play date on a Thursday, and then there's something else on Friday. I'm fucking knackered. I can't fit those stuff in. My kids are lucky if they get to go to the ball pit once a week. And they are lucky. And they're like, ball pit. You know, I'm too tired to do it. So I feel that I'm... failing is too strong a word, but I definitely feel that they miss out because they don't have a nanny who has all that energy.
They don't miss out, first of all. But yeah, no,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. But I think, may I posit a theory?
Yeah.
Which is that I remember my mum being quite irritating once she'd given up work, which was in her late 50s. And suddenly I'd get these calls going, I found a box of whatever, cassette tapes in the loft. I want rid of them. I want them out. You need to come. And it would just, they'd be ramp up. There'd be like 3 messages over a week. The third message would be like, if you don't get rid of these fucking cassette. She was absolutely furious. And I'd just be thinking, Mum, man, like, chill out. A, why do you care?
Yeah.
And B, why does it have to be done now? They've been in the loft for 20 years. Why does it have to be done now? I've got shit to do, Mum. And I suddenly found myself being like that with basically my husband, where I go,
suddenly, like, I ramp up from 0 to 100, where it, I've noticed something that's been there for ages, or a cupboard we can't use because something's in there of his, which, frankly, there's way more of my stuff in our house than his. But I just, the more that I'm at home, the more I get frazzled by that and irritated by that.
Yeah.
Which brings, you know, was like, if I was working, I wouldn't notice that. It wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, it's my mum.
But
yeah.
The point is, does it have to be, like, and, you know, I totally get, you know, you and this is a massive caveat, you know, obviously we are talking in a position whereby, you know, you are not the major breadwinner. You could still, at the moment, you know, not work if you wanted to. And when your kids are at nursery for 3 hours... Mm. You know, when, you know, your eldest is at school and your youngest is about to go to nursery, that time could be for yourself to have whatever your thing is that makes you feel like you can walk down the street and be relaxed and calm and together and whatever. You don't need, you know what I mean? You don't need to work. And if that means that therefore your mental health...
One, I don't need 3 hours a day for my mental health. I mean, that will just send me down a mental hole.
Yeah.
No. I mean, literally.
But why is that wrong? Like, so if we go back to, I'm going to, so my friend Henry, his wife, I introduced them to each other, you know them
Molly
too. Yes. So they, Molly is like uber successful, runs a global, massive global company. They made the decision that he would be a stay-at-home dad. But it's very clear with them in the sense that while the kids, before the kids were both school age, they're now both at school, so it's different. But like before they were school age, they had a nanny 3 days a week and he played golf. I mean, he loves golf and he was also like working to become a pro and blah, blah. But like he played golf for 3 days.
Well, what Henry, lucky Henry, who's also super talented at singing and all the rest of it, I don't have that thing. So I didn't, I think this is the big danger. You've always had that thing. So you had stuff that you could carve out as yours. I don't have an identifiable, but I love to. You know, one of Will's friends once said to me, where do you go off and read? And I was like, I beg your pardon? I thought, she can't be talking about Grants here. And she went, you know, where do you take yourself off to read? And this was, I think, had I had a kid at this point? I don't
you
even
sit
think.
Sit on the window like, seat.
Do you take yourself to the British Library? And I said, my head was cocked, you know, like dogs when they hear a funny sound. I thought, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she said, what I used to do when I lived in London, because she lives in Suffolk or Norfolk or somewhere now, is I'd take myself to the London Library and I'd... Rightio. No, I'm not that person. I don't have the thing that people go, oh, that's what Sally needs. I don't have that. I mean, I did yoga sort of quite a lot for a bit, but I'm not the person that can go off and have... I'm from a working class background. I cannot live with myself and look at myself in the mirror to go off to a yoga class and have a juice.
But is that a working class thing? Because I don't think I can do that. And I think a lot of the things that I've, you know, David insisted that we had help with the kids because he was like, I'm not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's for his sanity that so that, you know, he feels like I've been given a break. That's a very cheap way of explaining it. But I understand it and it makes sense. But for quite a while, and I think I've got the equilibrium now, for quite a while, I was creating things to do.
Of course, yes.
While I had help to justify the fact that I had help.
I remember that time. I also remember another friend of mine, and I'd only had one kid at this point, I didn't understand it, watching her nanny take her kid to the park. And she took the high road around the park so they wouldn't see it. She took herself off for a solo lunch. I didn't understand that with the one kid. I thought, that's fucking weird. Well, why aren't you being with your kid? That is weird. Whereas now I've got two kids, I'd be like, I'd be running in the opposite direction so they wouldn't see you. Obviously you would. But I didn't have your... You've got a thing where you produce stuff, you create stuff. I used to run comms for charities. I would have to go out and find an international crisis. To have my thing and carve my time.
Hello.
Do you know what's funny is I would do that because ironically, before I had kids, there was no real massive international humanitarian crisis. I mean, there wasn't. I remember being in my agency and saying, God, we haven't had anything for ages, have we? The minute I have kids, the biggest international humanitarian crises that just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I have watched while breastfeeding, incontinent, and sort of raised eyebrow going, no, another fucking, what? I would have been so busy, so busy. So instead, my thing is following how people are talking about that on Twitter, going, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, I'd have done it this way. I don't have that thing. And I guess the goal is, and I think this is what probably a lot of stay-at-home mums feel, is I need the space to find what that thing is. And it's very difficult when you have, you know, sort of laid yourself at the altar of rearing children as splendidly as I have, to then come out from that and feel it's okay to take time to think about what the fuck you want to do next. Yeah. And you just feel like a self-indulgent twat. And you just think, oh, maybe, you know, you're so low down on your pecking order that, yeah, that I'm sort of terrified and can't wait for her to start school. Because it's like, no, crunch time now. You're certainly not going to have another baby to fill that gap. Let's get thinking. You know, that's scary. I'm no spring chicken. So, yeah. Come back to me after she's been at school for a few months. Oh God, I'm terrified.
Yikes. What is the worst piece of advice or the worst thing anyone's ever said to you about having kids or when you're...
That cardamom pepper tea shit is quite high up there. Worst thing. I mean, the thing is, it all depends on the kind of mum you are. So I can't, you know, it's all retrospective. People going, take time for yourself. It's impossible to tell somebody who doesn't do that to do that. It's like, you know, asking a blind person to see. It's very, you can't. You know, I remember lots of people going, just go to a yoga class, things will be all right. And me thinking, you don't understand this the rising level of anxiety that leaves in me. Mm. Just ignore advice would be my advice. Just fucking sling a deaf into the whole thing and you'll work it out. And I think probably that was probably the best piece of advice, to ignore everybody, which I think came from you, and I'd already had children. So you were telling me that after I'd had children, and I was like, really? No, yours was, don't read the books. And I was like, but you don't understand, because next to Will's side of the bed, I mean, it was like there were all these child-rearing books, and then you'd ask him, you know, you'd come up at night and he'd be reading them, and part of you'd be like, oh, and the other part would be like, oh, God, you know?
Yeah.
When you've got a partner that overthinks and overreads like that.
But I have a partner like that. Like,
did he read all the books?
Oh, he was good. He read loads of books, but that's how he approaches things. Like, we've got a puppy, and he's the same with the puppy. Like, he's very good at, well, a lot of things, but he's very good at kind of looking in and focusing on the detail and retaining a lot of that theory and strategy and all that kind of thing. I'm very much big picture, and I'm very much with him. Okay, give me the headlines.
I've only ever been a headline reader. Yeah, I mean, the same. Number of times that's caught me out. Yeah. I remember sending a job app round to people thinking it was in Vanuatu, going, woohoo, anyone want to work on a tropical island? And everybody, I sent it like to hundreds of people for a medical thing. And I was like, I know loads of people that would go for this. And they all went, Sally, it's not in Vanuatu. That's what their clinic is called. It was a sort of Vanuatu office. Oh, sorry about that. Oh,
where was the office?
I mean, it was in London. It was the Vanuatu. And I'd sent it to all my international people. Anyone in Kenya fancy going to Vanuatu? Moron. So, yeah, I've only ever been a headline reader. It gets me in trouble a lot. I don't know. I think those books make you feel shit. I mean, they definitely make you feel shit. I don't think they're designed to. And I think they want to be helpful. But just drop the books. I tell you what I quite like, Mumsnet. God, I get lost in Mumsnet. I love Mumsnet. What would be the advice? I don't know.
what would you do? So if you, God forbid, got pregnant again, had another child, what would you do differently?
Well, I know this now, probably nothing. That's what's so terrifying. I probably wouldn't do anything differently. And I'd probably come out the end of another 2.5 years and go, how the hell did we survive that? Because I sometimes look at both my kids and go, how the fuck did we survive that? Yeah, I don't think I'd do anything differently. And that's definitely not because I did it brilliantly.
But it's good to know.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many reasons why I'm not going to have another kid. But that would be, I don't know, reason number 56, because I know I would be incapable of doing anything differently.
So thank you so much to Sally Clark for coming in to talk to me. When Sal says, I don't have my thing, I'm not sure it's necessary. I think a common thread is that women, probably more than men, don't tend to allow themselves that time. I mean, fucking sit on the sofa and stare at a wall. But, you know, maybe we do need that time for self-care, and self-care can be anything. I mean, like floss. I haven't been doing that recently, and I've been telling my dentist it's because I'm too tired. Now, yeah, stay, you know, look after yourself. Floss. Kick back, relax, floss and get a smear. Anyway, I hope we have successfully opened debate and yet closed a chapter of this podcast. Next week, I will be talking to the wonderful Catherine Parkinson, who I had the joy to meet a couple of weeks ago, and she met my husband at a thing and said, oh, I listened to your podcast, which was utterly thrilling. So she agreed to come on, and we're new best friends. So that's a very good one. And in fact, I've already booked her brilliant husband, Harry Peacock, who plays the funniest part in Toast, which is Ray Purchase. He will be coming on probably in June. That one will go out. So the whole Parkinson Peacock family. Anyway, I hope you have a good couple of weeks, and thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.